Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how are you doing today?
Oh, Kyle, I'm doing so good. You could say that I'm doing grand.
How are you doing? I'm good. I'm well. A little sleepy, a lot of late nights, but I'm here. I'm present. And I better be present because this is a present-worthy movie this that we're talking about.
Because you know who was present for this? Everybody. Wes Anderson and everyone, but also yeah. Wes Anderson.
Well, did you watch anything else this week other than this present movie?
No, I haven't. Mm-hmm. Which, knowing the lineup of movies you've watched, is technically more than you've seen because you've seen the opposite of cinema. You've watched the negative space of movies, and if they were to come into contact with real movies, they would cancel out and destroy the genre forever.
Yeah, possibly.
What have you watched, Kyle?
Well, the only movie I watched, and I will get into something else quickly after, but I saw Sonic the Hedgehog 2 on Wednesday at this advanced screening.
you're a real hedgehog. You're a real hedgehead.
I felt like an imposter. Like I had such imposter syndrome sitting there by myself, surrounded by 79-year-olds and a bunch of
really old
closeted or very openly furries.
They were not closeted. If you are wondering if they're closeted or not, they're open.
Probably. The movie itself was like not bad. It was probably as good as the first Sonic movie, which is to say that it was, in fact, a movie of passable quality.
Yeah. And for a Sonic 2? Sure.
Yeah. Jim Carrey is just kind of like in his typical element, which is it works really well because he's like super goofy, which is perfect for the character.
I bet that was the heart and soul of the movie.
Yeah.
Is what if Jim Carrey's a goofy guy?
Yeah, exactly. And like it is very clearly a kid's movie. It is designed for the 9-year-olds. But I will say I've never seen grown men get more excited for a post-credit scene than I have when the Sonic 2 post-credit scene started up. Oh my goodness. They were literally jumping and cheering.
No, Kyle, I don't give a shit about spoilers for Sonic the Hedgehog 2. And if the listeners out there do, I don't care about you either. Yeah. What was the post-credit scene?
Pretty simple. You can skip for like 10 seconds.
Don't. I want you to hear this.
It was basically just a tease for Shadow.
Oh.
So, and you know, one of the more popular Sonic characters, which, I mean, you could see it coming from a mile away. Like, he is the next most popular Sonic character after, like, Knuckles and Tails.
Yeah.
Or actually probably popular than Knuckles and Tails.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, where else do they go? Do they do Robotnik again? Probably
yes,
not.
But why not?
Yeah. But it was cool. I'll probably go see Sonic 3 only just to relate back if it was also just as much a movie as Sonic 2 and Sonic 1.
You're in this deep. You got to keep going. The only way out is through at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to see these. So I love hearing how they were. Because this is the most I'll ever engage with the Sonic movie series.
Jim Carrey is definitely carrying the movie performance-wise. Ben Schwartz is good as Sonic in terms of the voice performance. He actually seems to care. And the voice actor that does Tails is the same one that does it for like the games and the movies.
Okay.
Or sorry, the games and the TV shows, which is cool. Like you don't really see that often, especially like with, you know, big Hollywood movies. They want to get big Hollywood stars.
Yeah, like Chris Pratt. Is Idris Elba Knuckles?
Yes, and I was just going to get to that because, man, this was just a paycheck for him. It was the most wooden voice performance I have heard in a long time.
Man wanted his paycheck. He made a deal with the devil, and that was, you will get a moderate amount of money to voice Knuckles, the echidna.
Yeah, and like, it was the lines that they were giving him could have been funny if he actually put maybe a little bit of commitment and effort into it.
If he didn't record it completely under duress, like a gun to him and his family, him begging for them to pull the trigger on him and save them.
Yeah, but no, like you could just tell like he was not invested in Knuckles the Echidna. But
not a shocker. I don't think he was a lifelong knucklehead like you were.
It was funny too because there was like a pre-show like featurette where like Ben Schwartz and Idris Elba were like doing a quirky interview thing, and you could just see how much it pained Idris Elba to be there and like talk about Knuckles like he had any semblance of an idea of who this guy was.
The whole movie's voice work for him still doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, so yeah, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Go see it. No, I don't care.
No, yeah,
do whatever. What you want. Make your own decision. If you're going to see it, you probably have seen it already. So
yeah.
All right.
Kyle, what else did you watch?
So Attack on Titan, season 4, the quote, final season, finished its part 2. And I figured that that would be it. I've been saying so far that that was the end of Attack on Titan. These motherfuckers announced part 3.
I love that your recap of Attack on Titan had just been Kyle versus the announcement of show order. It has been a cosmic struggle between you and just their like production schedule.
And like, I kind of got the hint because I had read in a couple places that where they were in the anime compared to how many more chapters they had of the manga was like 8 or 9 more chapters of manga. And so I was like, okay, we got one more episode and they're going to get through all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were like, okay, there's going to be a movie or there's going to be a part 3. And so eventually they finally announced part 3. So I'm like, okay, great. So I can finally finish this next year. 2023.
Oh my god, you were massively played.
I know.
You came into this thinking that you had slid into the perfect setup to watch it, and now you are the butt end of the joke.
I was literally thinking, I was like, this was the perfect time to jump in because I get on a little bit at the end of the excitement, but no, now I gotta be along with the fucking chump ass longtime fans who have been doing this for years.
Yeah.
And wait another year for their final season, but it is good.
Final season. For now. Yeah. Oh my
god. Well, the manga's ended. Like okay, after the last part, it's like it's done. There's no more. Mm-hmm. And so once it finishes next part, like it'll be done. And that'll be that until, I don't know, they probably will do a movie adaptation eventually. But
yeah, whatever, probably.
But it is good. And I really like the kind of direction they took the final season. I know there's been some controversy about it because you're familiar with Last of Us 2.
Yes.
So you know how they made you play as and focus on the bad character?
Yeah,
for a little
like
while?
The character who does awful things to mm-hmm. your beloved fan fave.
Yeah, and so season 4 starts with that basically, where you're focusing on the quote bad guy and not the core characters that you're supposed to be rooting for, and you're expected to empathize with them eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people don't like that because it's challenging and it's hard.
Yeah,
but I really appreciated it because, you know, it is challenging and it's hard, and it does give you a different perspective and also draws the parallels between the two, which is very unique storytelling.
Yeah.
And I really like it, and you kind of forget that they are the bad guys because in Attack on Titan, things get so muddled like all mm-hmm. the time. Like the who is the actual opposition just changes constantly.
Yeah.
And so as like new information comes out, and so it's really unique in that way.
That's
and
interesting.
I really like it. It's a really good show.
Hmm.
And I would actually recommend it to pretty much everybody. But maybe wait until
but
next
wait
year.
A year. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I watched. So let's get into the actual movie we're going to talk about this episode. Of course, season 2 of Snubs and Dubs has been covering the films from the year 2014. And so for episode 10, we are talking about The Grand Budapest Hotel. Have you seen it before?
I have seen it before at least 2 or 3 times.
Same.
This is a reoccurring movie in mm-hmm. my life. How about you?
This is definitely the Wes Anderson movie I've rewatched the most.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it when it came out, and I've seen it quite a few times since then, in the 7 or 8 years that it's been since that came out. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched it in theater and I've seen it like at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then like rewatching on my tiny little TV. I've seen this in as many screen sizes as you can bring.
Yeah. Do you remember the last time you watched it?
It was fairly recently. Actually, I watched it with some of my roommates maybe 6 months ago.
Well,
that's and when close. We came back to it, it was like, oh yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go again. Let's do it.
It is a very easy movie to rewatch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But if you're interested in the Grand Budapest Hotel, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. There is a Criterion version. I don't have it, but it is nice looking.
You don't have it yet?
Oh, possibly.
Oh, dang.
If you were to buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you have not seen the Grand Budapest Hotel yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. But without further ado, let's get into it. So, of course, The Grand Budapest Hotel is directed by Wes Anderson. It was written by Wes Anderson with a story by Wes Anderson and Hugo Guinness, and it was inspired by the writings of novelist Stefan Zweig, which it makes note of at the end, but it's not like an adaptation of his work necessarily.
Mm-hmm. It's just like spiritual vibey successor.
Yeah, I think even the character that Jude Law plays is supposed to be based off of this author in a sense. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that card and thinking, oh man, I should do some homework on this. I should really get in there and find out things about this guy. And then I went to bed and never did.
Yeah, I didn't look up anything about him either, but that's just where you got the inspiration from. It stars Ralph Fiennes as Mr. Gustav, Tony Revolori as Zero, F. Murray Abraham as Mr. Mustafa, Matteo Amalric as Serge, Adrian Brody as Dimitri, Willem Dafoe as Jopling, Jeff Goldblum as Deputy Kovacs, and just a bunch of other famous people, including Harvey Keitel, Jude Law, Bill Murray, Edward Norton, Saoirse Ronan, Jason Schwartzman, Leah Sado, Tilda Swinton, Tom Wilkinson, and Owen Wilson. There's just so many people in this movie.
It's all the main Wes Anderson players and their friends.
Yeah.
There's everyone plus one to this movie.
Yeah, exactly. And like these people come back in like the French Dispatch too. So like he grabs new people every time and just continues to carry them into his filmography.
Whatever last movie he ever makes is going to have 300 roles in it.
Yeah. And everybody in it is going to want to be there because it just looks like so much fun to do. It has a runtime of 100 minutes.
Crisp.
It's a great runtime.
Crisp.
And it released on March 7th, 2014. Jason, what did you think of The Grand Budapest Hotel?
So going into this, I knew I loved it. I had seen it not that long ago, but when I rewatched it, I realized, oh man, I love this even more. Another pit of my heart has been unlocked. And every time I watch it, I'm like, fuck, this is incredible.
I know.
And even more incredible than the last time I watched it. Mm-hmm. God, I love this movie.
I fucking love this movie too. It is just such a joy.
It is.
And like the jokes hit pretty much every time too.
Yeah.
Some of the lines in here are just like eternally quotable and just in your brain. That one shot of Mr. Gustav where he's talking to the police. He's like, she's been murdered and you think I did it. And then he just runs away.
It's so good. Oh, and it's just like, it works so well with his like weird style that you don't, it's all kind of like aloof and like artsy and serious. So when they do something stupid like that, it punctuates it so well that it's just hilarious.
Yeah. There's another line I really like where after the police try to arrest Zero for, you know, just being an immigrant and he just tries to be like, you know, this is what we do in our graceful, elegant, whatever. And he's like, ah, fuck it. just gives up on the facade.
It's just so good. Like the couple times that he breaks that bizarre character that he's built.
Yeah. And especially Ralph Fiennes is so good in this movie.
Oh, Ray's fine.
But everyone does a really good job. And this was Tony Revolori's first like major motion picture. This is like his kind of breakout. And then he went to the Spider-Man movies as Flash. And so
I always think this movie's kind of older than it is, but that makes sense. Yeah. He was right into the Spider-Man universe.
Mm-hmm.
What a great career from a guy who was a bellboy to now being a sidekick again. And that's kind of it.
Yeah. Well, do you want to get into the plot real quick for this movie?
Oh, let's dive right into this plot real quick for this movie. In a cemetery in a former nation of Zabrovka, a young girl visits the shrine of renowned writer simply known as Author, reading his most cherished book, The Grand Budapest Hotel. This is level one of the movie we're watching.
Yep.
The book, level two, written in 1985, recounts his 1968 vacation at the once grand, then drab hotel. There, he meets its owner, Zero Mustafa, who at a dinner tells his rags-to-riches story. That's like level 3 through 5 there. Like we're deep in this. In 1932, Zero is the newly hired lobby boy at the prestigious Grand Budapest Hotel. I think it's supposed to be Budapest, but they say Budapest.
Yeah, they all just say Budapest.
So we're going to say Budapest.
But it's also like not in Budapest.
Yeah.
And as far as I understand from the facts, like it's not even that based on a Budapest hotel.
Yeah.
But so, yeah.
So this isn't Budapest, different place.
Yeah.
This is Budapest.
Yeah.
Monsieur Gustave H., the hotel's fastidious concierge, seduces old wealthy clients, including the 84-year-old Dowager, Madame D., with whom he has had a nearly two-decade affair. She mysteriously dies a month after her last hotel visit. Gustave and Zero visit Madame Schloss's Lutz estate, where they encounter surviving relatives for the reading of her will by her attorney, Deputy Vilmos Kovacs. I love Jeff Goldblum in this.
He's just good.
He's never not been Jeff Goldblum for even a second.
Yeah.
Kovacs announces a recent codicil to the will, which bequeathed Boy with Apple, a priceless Renaissance painting, to Gustave. Madame's son, Dimitri, is outraged and demands Gustave's arrest. Gustave and Zero leave, absconding with the painting for safekeeping. Gustave is later arrested by Inspector Henkels under the suspicion of Madame's murder. He befriends a gang during his imprisonment, and the men plot their escape. Gustave has Zero place digging tools inside pastries made by Agatha, an apprentice baker at Mendel's, and Zero's fiancé.
Is it a coincidence that Paddington came out this year and Paddington 2, which came out a few years later, has a very similar prison plot as the Grand Budapest Hotel?
This is a pretty common prison plot. It's people get arrested, even under false pretenses, and then have digging tools brought in through eating things, and then they escape. This is Shawshank.
Yeah,
but like so. Prettier. This is a prettier Shawshank with slightly more shirtless dudes.
Paddington does it in a different way too.
Where he's a bear.
Yeah, well, that for sure. But he still like befriends everybody, but he does it in like a totally different way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess you're right. It is still like the kind of classic prison plot. But
yeah, this is a classic. He didn't done it. Now he's escaping from prison because he didn't done it. Gustav and the others dig their way out and disperse. When Zero and Gustav are reunited, they set out to prove Gustav's innocence with the assistance of a fraternity of concierges, the Society of the Crossed Keys. They learn that Madame D had a missing second will, which would only take effect should she be murdered. Dimitri's hired assassin, J.G. Jopling, and I forgot to mention, earlier in the movie when you first get introduced to J.D. Jopling, the movie becomes not just a movie, but a movie with Willem Dafoe in it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Willem Dafoe, he trails their whereabouts, murdering Kovacs and severing a bunch of his fingers, Madame D's butler, Sergei's ex, and Sergei X's sister, in his pursuit to kill Gustav. Following a chase, Zero pushes Jopling off a cliff to save Gustav, and the two men continue their escape from swarming Zbrovkin troops led by Henkels. Gustav, Zero, and Agatha arrive back at the Grand Budapest to find it converted into a military headquarters. Agatha sneaks in to retrieve Boy with Apple to sell, but is spotted with the painting by Dimitri. Gustav and Zero rush to save Agatha from harm as she flees from Dimitri. He shoots at them, initiating a confusing shootout with Zbrovkin troops. Henkel stops the fight. Agatha's attempt to escape leaves her and Zero hanging from a balcony before safely falling into a van of pastries. Madame's second will, making Gustav the beneficiary of her fortune, is found attached to the back of Boy with Apple. He succeeds her as owner of the Grand Budapest Hotel and becomes one of the wealthiest Zbrovkins. He travels by train with the now wed Zero and Agatha to celebrate before encountering hostile soldiers that destroy Zero's refugee documents. Gustav tries to fend off the soldiers but is shot dead. Zero inherits his fortune and maintains the Grand Budapest in memory of Agatha, who died of flu with their infant son. The not very happy end.
Yeah. For like such a happy movie. Brisk plot, by the way. Good run.
Wikipedia just at a pace clips this thing down. But a lot of it, I think, the movie feels longer because you're just kind of sitting there stewing in the beautiful scenes that Wes Anderson has dropped onto our screen.
And there are so many like beats of just like jokes and transitions and physical comedy and like just all that stuff that contributes to the overall enjoyment of the movie, but not necessarily the whole narrative of the movie.
Yeah. Like the actual plot itself is pretty thin when you stack it up one event after each other, but like each event lasts longer. You kind of simmer in it with all the kooky characters doing their crazy shenanigans.
Yeah. One of the scenes that you mentioned, there was a video on YouTube about it. I forget who made it, but essentially when Willem Dafoe's character is chasing Jeff Goldblum's character through like a museum and everything, Wes Anderson essentially kind of one for one rips that from a Alfred Hitchcock movie, like a lesser known one, but the result isn't the same. And so even if you know the scene, you are still taken off guard because it goes in a different direction. So
it's, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's such a Wes Anderson thing to do, though. Like, he kind of takes the entire, like, what an average movie, like, average movie techniques and stylizes the absolute living shit out of them to be his own product. So it makes sense that, like, he's throwing back to this Hitchcock movie, but is going to do his own take on it where four fingers get severed.
Yep, exactly. And this movie is so pretty to look at.
Like, every scene, every shot, like every camera movement. It's not even just like a set still or anything. Mm-hmm. It's the way the camera moves in the shots, the way the characters do literally anything. It's all so perfect.
There's this one shot of Saoirse Ronan, who plays Agatha, where it's just her face and like lights glimmering around it.
It's so pretty.
Dude, if that was me and I looked that good in this light and Wes Anderson shot me like that, I would brag about that for the rest of my fucking life.
That's just her profile picture for the next rest of her life.
Yeah. I mean, Saoirse Ronan, like, even with you put a birthmark on her, it's hard to make her
anything but just beautiful. And like, man, every time I go back, like, even though I remember particular shots and scenes, the ones that I've spent a lot of time thinking of, I'll think of about them a little bit less, because every time I rewatch it now, I'm focusing on a different thing that I didn't see the first time, or was so caught up in the hotel that I didn't like see how cool the prison looks. And like, the when they're escaping, everything looks so amazing. Like, every even boring areas, the way that like the colors are and the frame and everything just makes it look so impressive.
Yeah, like the quality and the detail that went into the production and costume design and every inch of this movie that was shot was just like astounding. Like, there was clearly so much care and so much passion put into this movie, which is why it makes it Wes Anderson's his best movie.
Probably. I can't imagine another Wes Anderson I'd put above it.
It is definitely his most acclaimed movie.
Oh yeah.
And actually also his highest grossing movie.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where I'm sitting here and I'm trying to remember a piece of it that I'm going to just say like, oh, this part was good, this part was good. But the whole thing is just so great.
Everything moves at such a good clip. Like, there's no misses in it. It really shows you how far him and hotels have come since Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
Oh, he made huge bounds in what was going on screen.
Yeah. There's like one kind of joke that never really landed with me, and it was Zero's insistence that Gustav doesn't flirt with Agatha. I don't know if maybe that's just delivery on Tony Revolori, but like, I don't know if he's that like serious enough or like that angry. But that's kind of a performance thing. But
I found it worked because it was just kind of like a kid being jealous about his girlfriend to someone who clearly doesn't actually pose a threat at all. So it's kind of like, oh, you dumb kid. Like, I mean,
she's
silly.
Yeah, she's only a kid, or I guess she's not a kid. She's like, they got married, so, but like, she's not 84. You know? Yeah. So she's not in his.
She's not in danger for another six centuries.
And, you know, she's dead. So,
Rick, damn.
It's weird, like, how this movie, which is so joyful for the majority, ends on such a somber note, but yet you don't feel somber when it ends. Because like Agatha dies, and like obviously there's real raw emotion in the performance of F. Murray Abraham when he's telling the story to Jude Law, but yet I never really felt that emotional. I was just like kind of in it and enjoying it still.
And I think like it's a really interesting ending where like there's a lot of emotional weight, but the line's just, he was shot.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. Like, there's not, there's no depiction of it. It just goes back to like a dimmer scene where he's telling the story again. And like, you can see the color drain literally from the shot, which is like kind of layered throughout.
Yeah.
But it's just such an interesting way to do that, because this movie is mostly between World War One and World War Two.
Yeah.
And the first scene when they're on the train and have guards inspect, I'm assuming that was World War One or something in that realm, because like the soldiers acted a lot differently. And even the depiction of the soldiers was much different, where they were like, at least to some level, courteous and would talk to them and were willing to actually look at their papers. And then the second time they're on the train, it's just immediate violence. And now he's shot and dead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and also you don't have like Edward Norton there, whose character knows Gustav.
Yeah.
And like, there's like, none of these people have probably ever been to the Grand Budapest.
No, hotel. It's kind of like a rejection of that higher class, finer thing kind of life.
Yeah. And I mean, like, at the end of the day, Gustav is just a concierge, like, which doesn't sound like it would be that prestigious of a role.
No.
But yet he, like, and you even see him, like, when he eats dinner like alone in his room, doesn't look that grand or anything.
It's shit.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, he still is like hotel staff, which probably isn't paid the best, but he is living this lifestyle where he's like interacting with all these people and putting on this, I guess, I mean, it might be a facade, but he's putting on this personality that is just so mm-hmm. what they need or what like they expect. And this is so large and grand.
Yeah. But, now, do you think that Gustav was actually this like genuine, suave, charming man who befriended these older ladies just because, you know, he just had a little bit of proclivity that way? Or do you think he was actually trying to weasel his way into some wills?
I do think he was trying to weasel his way into some wills.
I think at least a little bit he was going for that. But what's interesting about that is, what's the point? He seems very happy working as a concierge at the hotel. The most expensive thing he owns is 20 bottles of cologne. Like, he doesn't own anything material. Why would he even care about that money?
True. And it might be like he does care about the relationships because, I mean, he considers them his friends mm-hmm. and he tells Dimitri before he gets punched in the face that he goes to bed with all his friends.
Yeah.
And he tells Zero that Tilda Swinton's character was a very good lay,
yep.
even though she was 84. So like,
and on literally death's doorbell, like, she was not far away.
Yeah. So like, I guess he does get some enjoyment out of it. And maybe there's some part of a, like a sleazy side to him mm-hmm. because he does break his facade every now and again in front of Zero.
Yeah.
Even with that line where it's like, ah, oh, fuck it. Like, so, you know, like he's not fully like, it is to a point, a facade, like a performance, mm-hmm. but I feel like he does get like some enjoyment out of it for sure.
Yeah. It's probably a little bit of both. There's no like clear cut answer to that, which is part of the fun of that character is that you never know mm-hmm. what's going on in that little beautiful head of his.
Yeah. And every character is so good. I don't think there's a single character that like feels out of place or, you know, underwritten or anything. Like, everyone feels exactly in the perfect place that they need to be.
Even Goldblum's character, who doesn't have like a tremendous amount of screen time.
Yeah.
You can see like he's an interesting dimensional guy, even though it's just Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum in a different movie, but it still works really well. Cause like, he has some kind of like entanglement, mm-hmm. is trying to sort it out while respecting the rule of law and is being intimidated by these thugs.
Yeah.
And he's just an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we clearly liked this movie.
It's good.
But what do you think the critics and audiences thought of this movie?
I'm going to say they loved it. I can't like, it's just, it appeals to everyone mm-hmm. because I liked it. That means it's universally beloved by everyone. 100. I'm going to give this, in all honesty, I think the critics are going to give it a 95 and the audiences are going to give it like an 89.
You were close in the 90 and 80 section.
I'll take
critics was 92, audiences 86. So just ever so slightly lower than what you expected.
That's fair.
But that's like a few percentage points. Like, that's splitting hairs.
Yeah.
IMDb was 8.1, Metacritic 88. So very highly regarded.
Yeah. Well, it deserves it. Did you see what he did there? Did you see Wes Anderson just get his juice flowing all over that screen?
Oh my God, yes. And like, I think this is where the French Dispatch went too far with that. I think this is the perfect mm-hmm. Wes Anderson expression.
Yeah.
Like, his style is perfect here. And where I think the French Dispatch just went a little too far.
Yeah.
But
it's so easy to get lost in it.
Yeah.
And like, this one, every single thing worked, but I can see how in other movies where if you go a little too far, a little too short,
yeah.
it falls off the rails pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. But you can see like he has like a lot of craft in here.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like an insanely competent filmmaker. But like, this is the only movie that the Academy's ever regarded.
Yeah.
Like, ever really looked at. And even The French Dispatch, which is his most recent one after, you know, Isle of Dogs and this. I guess Isle of Dogs got nominated for Academy Award for Animated Feature. But
it's not a fraction of the like accomplishment she deserves from that.
Yeah. And so like, I feel like he has this level of film in him and it's clear. And I think he just got to find the right story and the right balance.
Yeah. Go back to hotels.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. You knock it out of the park when a hotel's involved.
Yeah. Well, the audiences loved it and they did show up to it.
Ooh, yeah.
On a budget of $25 million. It made $163 million. There was a bigger number on Wikipedia, but I'm using the numbers that we normally use for consistency, which landed at 49th for the year, which
that's crazy.
Crazy.
But I mean, I feel like this is the average person might not have as high of a reverence for Wes Anderson as like people even remotely and more into cinema might.
Because
if you just see like Grand Budapest Hotel and like a pretty Pink Hotel. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't have like the street draw that other movies would have.
Yeah, but like it is a comedy.
It is.
And it's a very accessible comedy mm-hmm. too. Like obviously it does have that Wes Anderson flair and style, but yeah. I don't think it's inaccessible because of that.
No. Yeah. I think the challenge might be just getting people in the door.
Yeah.
But once they're in there, oh, mm-hmm. they're staying. They're yeah. extended stay at the Grand Budapest.
They're staying, but they're coming back.
Oh, probably with friends even.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, that was the highest grossing Wes Anderson movie so far. The French Dispatch and Isle of Dogs did not pass this. I had to double check. And yes, this is to date his highest grossing movie. It is also the highest grossing independent movie of 2014 and the highest grossing limited release movie of 2014.
Wow.
Wow.
Good for Wes Anderson.
But we've obviously given it some rave reviews, but let's put some numbers onto that. What is our score based firstly on enjoyment, Jason?
Oh man. Well, I am at the stage where God, I want to just heap it all on this movie, but yeah. I don't know. Should I?
I'm not going to tell you to do anything.
Okay.
Come well, from your heart.
I think it's fairly safe that for the enjoyment, at least that's a fiver. That is fuck. I love this movie. And every time I watch it, I've loved it.
Yep.
What are you giving this for enjoyment?
5. Yeah.
Fair.
You can't watch this and come away without enjoying it. Like, no. I know some people on Letterboxd did, which we'll get to after, but like, like, I don't know how.
Yeah.
Like, it is just joy on screen.
Well, maybe they hate joy. They might just be a terrible person. I don't know. Yeah.
Craft though.
Craft. Right. Well, okay. Well, here's the thing about this. I also have to give the Craft a 5.
100%.
I can't not. You just, everything.
Yeah.
It's 5.
It's a 5.
It's yeah. 5.
The cinematography is beautiful. The mm-hmm. score.
The score.
We haven't even mentioned the score yet. That is chef's kiss. Beautiful score.
Here's the hard thing about the Grand Budapest Hotel. It's all good.
Yeah.
How do you give accurate time to each good thing about it?
Yep. Execution.
Well, here's the thing. I got to give that a 5.
I also want to give this a 5. Like I already mentioned that there's not a character that feels underwritten and there's not an actor that feels like they're out of place.
No.
I mentioned that one beat about that joke that didn't necessarily land with me, mm-hmm. but that was it. And yeah. I can't dock it a point or even a half a point because of one stinky little bit that I yeah. didn't like. But that, and I can't even say I didn't like it. It just didn't land with me as well. Yeah. It's, everything about it is well executed. Like, I don't even know how you could argue that.
I don't know. What are you putting it at?
5.
Nice.
Rewatchability.
Oh, because here's the thing. How do you not give it a 5? I've watched it like 4 times and I love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be watching it probably soon. It's so good. I'm going to 20 out of 20. And Kyle, where are you going to put the rewatch? Are you also going to be on a little 20 out of 20 boat?
This is going to be my first ever 20 out of 20.
Oh my God, you did it. You opened your heart. You got to the end of last season yeah. and realized you never did that. And now you're doing it early in. I'm not even halfway yet.
Yeah, I know, right? That's crazy. I don't know if I ever thought that this would be a 20 out of 20, but then I never thought it couldn't be a 20 out of 20 because
yeah.
it is just that good. And every yeah. time I rewatch it, and I want to rewatch it again after this, like I couldn't not want to rewatch it after watching it again. It reminds me just how good it is and how yeah. much joy it brings me. And sometimes I do forget just how good this movie is, mm-hmm. but that just kind of happens with the distance, but you never forget this movie.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Even in times when I haven't watched this in a while,
yeah.
I'll just be sitting around doing something. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, you remember how the Grand Budapest Hotel looks?
Yeah.
Because you beautiful. Just remember it. Yeah.
Well, all congratulations, right. The Grand Budapest Hotel. You have received the first 40 out of 40. Perfect 100%
oh my
score.
God. That's
in
Stubbs
and
Dubs.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad it happened to our boy Wes Andy.
Yeah. It's so good. Well, I don't know if we really need to have that much of a discussion here, but where is this ranking for you?
Okay. I mean, it's 20 out of 20. I'm going to put it first.
It is going first
it's
for
going
me
first.
Too. Interstellar, get out of here. You've been knocked.
It's not a competition. I didn't have to think all that long about this yeah. one. The only question is, how long can it do this run for?
I don't know.
The answer is probably pretty long.
Yeah.
Like at least a week.
The thing is I look ahead of the season and I could possibly see another perfect movie in the distance. And so like...
And I think I know which one you're talking about. And I'm excited to get there to see if maybe it's something that I'll consider too when mm-hmm. the time gets there.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard amazing things about the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. We have. Clearly the movie.
I mean, it is a fucking great movie. It is a movie. We'll get there. Yeah, shit.
Well, so, it's just straight to the top. Not really that. Not much of a thinker there.
No. And it's weird because we thought we had clear sections where like the top of the top was like they're the best.
Yeah, it's like, tight in there. You can't just leap ahead of where that's at.
But now we've entered an area where now we have a 20 out of 20, like a perfect movie on this, which still feels like better than the group below, which is strange.
And like by a margin, this is the Wayne Gretzky where there are the best of the best, but they ain't Wayne Gretzky. Yeah. He's miles ahead. When Wes Anderson had the juice flowing and baby, it flooded all the way to the top. There's nothing misses. Like even that one thing that wasn't your favorite bit of that. I thought I didn't even notice. It was just like, it was part of it to me, man.
Wow.
It's grand.
It is grand.
It's and Budapest. Also
and maybe a hotel.
I think so.
This might end up being a shorter episode because we just have nothing but great things to say about it.
And that doesn't make for fantastic content. No. We're just being like, man, this is so good.
Yeah, it's hard to nitpick this movie. It really is. And I tried.
And you hardly let yourself do it.
I know. And it's because I watched this movie quite a few times already that I was like looking for things that I didn't necessarily love. But yeah, like, I don't really know, God, man.
What a movie. Well, do you have some letterbox or fun facts? I don't remember what comes next.
I do have some fun letterbox reviews. So as I mentioned, there are some people on here that did not like this movie, but I'm going to start off with the people that did. 5 stars by Houston. You kind of mentioned the layers here, but this guy lays them out. A movie about a girl who reads a book about a man who hears a story about a lobby boy who meets a man who runs a hotel for which the story, the book, and the movie are named for.
I still don't follow.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, though. It's pretty.
This is a 4.5 by Jay on a rewatch. Me finding something with possible sentimental value. I'll never part with it. It reminded me of her. It will always remind me of her. Always. I will die with this above my bed. Me 2 minutes later when the emotions have calmed down. Actually, we should sell it sooner rather than later.
I love that. Also, they never actually sell it. It's in the lobby. Don't.
Yeah. And like a lot of Letterboxd was just quotes from the movie, which is such slow balling fruit, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
But that one I had to mention because that one is like, that was one of my favorite jokes.
Yeah, that is really solid.
All right, now we're getting to the scum, the people that didn't like it. And by her name, you could probably tell. Lucy Hates Films gave this a 0.5 star.
Okay, she's hating it for a bit. God damn it.
Couldn't cope with the rambling about nothing and general fannying about it. This film gave me ADHD. No, Lucy, I think you have ADHD.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. It's just not Wes Anderson's fault. Yeah.
Because you clearly couldn't focus on this movie that was in front of you.
Which is, it's a decently fast moving movie too. Yep. How do you lose a 10? Lucy, we're sorry.
All right. Well, this is the favorite one I found. This is 0.5 star by Squeeble Ya. Dear Wes Anderson fans, if you love symmetry so much, watch a fucking triangle.
Dog, I will. Watch me watch a triangle. Yeah. Write a book about you watching me watch a triangle and then make a movie about it.
Well, the Academy loved this movie. It was nominated for 9 awards. Ooh, do you know what some of those might be?
I'm willing to take a stab at it. I'm going to guess not Best Picture.
This is a Best Picture
nominee. What am I thinking? What am I doing? Well, I'm going to guess Best Picture. I'm also going to guess Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess Cinematography.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to guess Score.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to guess Best Supporting Actor.
No, sir.
I'm going to guess they're wrong. I'm going to guess that I would like to fight them about it, actually. Costumes.
Yes, sir.
Set design.
Yes, sir.
Makeup. Yes, is that with costumes?
Nope.
Okay. How many am I at? How many am I missing right now?
I think you're missing 2.
Oh, crap. I don't know. What are they?
The other two are editing and screenplay.
Oh, so, I didn't want to think of those.
Yeah. So yes, it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Original Screenplay, Best Costume Design, Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Best Original Score, and Best Production Design. It won 4 of those awards, Costume Design, Makeup and Hairstyling, Original Score, and Production Design, all technical categories.
Hell yes. That's at least it won. You know what? Wes Anderson finally has some things to hang up in his closet,
yep.
even though none of them are for him directly, so he can't actually hang them up in his closet, but he could take pictures of them and he can hang those up in his closet.
And he would probably take the most symmetrical picture of his closet. weird though, no acting.
That is bizarre, but now I'm kind of thinking, are both of the actors leads or who would be the lead? Who would be the supporting? It might've just been, they don't quite have enough screen time each to be in either.
I would say Ralph Fiennes has enough screen time to be a lead.
Yeah.
I feel like there's not much you can argue there. If anything, he could be supporting, but like, I feel like he's enough to be a lead.
I feel like that too. But yeah, it's kind of tough because I'm thinking who would they both deserve it? Probably.
Yeah. I would say that if you were going to nominate anyone from this movie, it's probably just Ralph Fiennes.
Probably. Yeah.
And everyone else has probably not enough of a role or as not as like big of a role to be nominated.
Yeah.
Like Tony Revolori does what he needs to do for this movie and it works, but like, it is not a grand performance. It is not a big, you know, emotional performance. It is just exactly what it needs to be. And that is perfect. It works for the movie. But Ralph Fiennes, I think, gave enough of kind of nuance and grandiose that it maybe should have been.
That could be snub discussion. Yeah. I'm going to need to think on that one for the next 16 weeks. And then we'll come back and we'll let you know.
Because right now it sounds like we got two potential best actor snubs.
Potentially.
Gyllenhaal and now Ralph Fiennes.
And neither of whom were even nominated, which is the more shocking thing.
Mm-hmm. Some other notable awards, it was the winner of the Golden Globe for Best Motion Picture Comedy or Musical. It also won a Grammy for the Best Original Score Soundtrack for Visual Media. And it won the Writers Guild of America Award for the Best Original Screenplay of that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
It also, I don't know if you, I don't think you have that in there. It won the prestigious first 40 out of 40 on Snubs and Dubs Best Picture Podcast.
Well, someone else got to add that to IMDb, you know.
Yeah, I'm on it.
Yeah, the-
it's there.
All right, well, let's transition into our interesting facts. First off, the scene in which Ludwig, which is Harvey Keitel's character, says, "Good luck, kid," before slapping Zero, Tony Revolori, across the face, was shot 42 times until Wes Anderson was satisfied. Keitel actually slapped Revolori every time. So I feel like Wes Anderson maybe just had a bad day with Tony Revolori.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, slap him again, Harvey Keitel. Again. Again.
And you thought Will Smith was bad.
Oh my. Oh,
ba-doom.
They updated about that today, eh?
Yeah, he's banned for 10 years from... Yeah,
from the Academy, any Academy events, but he can be nominated for awards.
Now that is his ultimate revenge, is make such an undeniably strong performance that they don't have a choice.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen in the next 10 years, especially considering that a lot of people aren't going to hire him.
I think he's going to lay low for a while.
So, very interesting development. But I guess he just respected the decision, was like, yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah, I think
don't know what you can do
out of that. That you regret pretty much immediately.
All right.
But anywho.
Despite the movie's title, Wes Anderson confessed in a national public radio interview that Prague was his main source of inspiration, not Budapest.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The Grand Prague Hotel doesn't have the same ring to
it. Awful ring to it. None whatsoever.
The 1968 sequences involving Jude Law and F. Murray Abraham were filmed first due to the production team first accessing the vacant old Gorlitz department store used for the hotel lobby and later the shuttered concert hall.
Stadthalle.
Thanks, Jason. Originally discovered in an ideal envisioned state, shabby, crumbling, but somehow enchanting in the ruins. The art team redressed the entire area to simulate the hotel in the 1930s. The drop ceiling was removed to reveal the original three-floor area, but was CG augmented to 6 floors.
So,
a lot of work into the production design. Wes Anderson sent several of the cast and crew members robes modeled after the hotel's color scheme, and Jeff Goldblum wears his every day. He says, it's my favorite robe.
I love Jeff Goldblum, and I love that about him and for him, really.
Lastly, Wes Anderson had all of his male actors grow their head and facial hair out in the months leading up to production, and then they were stylized once they arrived onto set. Quote from Anderson, "I think we certainly have the maximum supply of mustaches in this film."
Oh, I like that. That's cute. I love mustache. Mm-hmm.
Well, Do you have any final thoughts on The Grand Budapest Hotel?
It's just a really good movie.
Yeah.
It's just, we can say that for an hour, or we can just say it's a really good movie you should watch.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else to say other than if you haven't seen this movie, what the fuck are you doing?
Go watch it.
It's on Disney Plus, right? You watched it on Disney Plus?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I believe so.
Come on, guys.
It's on Disney Plus.
Take a break from the Star Wars Marvel show that you're watching right now.
Yeah.
And watch this.
It also has pretty lights going on.
Yeah.
And there's cameos of people. That's what you love.
Yeah, exactly.
Go get it.
Yeah. Embrace it.
Go.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 2, episode 10 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We would love to hear your guys' thoughts on the Grand Budapest Hotel or this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Share the show to everyone you know and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
Where'd you get this?
On the shelf.
If it's in a word or it's in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. A rumbling sound, then 3 sharp knocks.
Babadook, duck, duck.
That's when you'll know he's around. You'll see him if you look. Nothing bad's gonna happen, Sam.
That's right. Next time, we're talking about the Babadook. So make sure to watch it before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.